Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. We are on the cusp of Device Talks Minnesota. Looking forward to seeing folks on June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center. Thank you to everyone who is making this such a successful event. We'll likely sold out by the time you hear this, but go to minnesota.devicetalks.com if you want to try to get in. We may have a few seats left, but I kind of doubt it, but give it a shot. Thank you to the folks, the fine folks in Minnesota for embracing Device Talks Minnesota. It's great to be back in the Twin Cities. I know it's been a long time coming, and we were struggling for a few years since the pandemic to find the right time and the right place, and we did that June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center. So to everyone who is coming out, thank you so much. If you're not able to make it, or if you're going to try to make it, but it is sold out, we will be at the Twins game. Chris Newmark and I will be at the Twins game. I'll put the link to the ticket block in the show notes. We'll be there on Thursday, June 12th. It's a noon game, and we'll have a section of the ballpark that I'm told is a nice spot for networking and chatting. So I hope you'll join us then. But really, really, really grateful to all of our speakers, all of our attendees, and of course, all of our sponsors for making Device Talks Minnesota a success. And I can't wait to be back in Minnesota, finishing off our Minnesota MedTech Nerd Tour. So, all right, before we begin, we'll have, let's see, this episode, we'll have Heather Hudnut Page, who's helped us put together our Women in MedTech Breakfast at the conference. She'll be our in-studio guest. And then later on, I'm really pleased to bring you the conversation I had with Yvonne Tornos at Device Talks Boston. I don't have the words to express how grateful I am that he came out to be part of that show. He was very generous to me with his time and with his comments, and I think offered a lot for folks to think about and to get excited about. Zimmer Biomet is one of the more exciting med tech companies out there. We'll have a conversation a little, probably 3 or 4 weeks from now that will run this podcast. I think we'll just add to that excitement. So again, very happy to have, very thrilled to have Yvonne Tornos, as our opening keynote at Device Talks Boston. We will kind of pick it up right, where he comes up on stage. Right before that, Dr. Scott Sigmund, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, had given the future of orthopedics presentation or conversation with me, and he had referred to Yvonne Tornos as the Taylor Swift of orthopedics. So that's where that reference came in from. So that's it, folks. I know you'll enjoy that conversation. Thank you to the fine folks at Protolabs for sponsoring this episode and for being a sponsor of Device Talks Minnesota. All right, folks, let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom, doing well. Just said goodbye to my kids at the bus stop at the last day of school.
Is it really?
Where I live, yeah.
So wow.
I woke up super early and went over to Duffner's Donuts near my house, you know, so I could give the parents and kids some donut holes at the bus stop, you know, be a good neighbor, like even offered them to the bus driver, but he said he'd already gone McDonald's and two donuts, which, I mean, that's fueling up for you, man. I mean, that's the way it goes. Yeah,
so. Wow. So you wrap up on the early side there. Our kids go to like the 18th, 19th.
Yeah, wrapping up early side, you know, and at least I think it's changing, but I mean, it used to be that we'd get school started like right after Labor Day, which, you know, in the past, you know, including this year, which, I mean, yeah, we got to enjoy the summer here in Minnesota, you know.
That's right. Can't
mess around with that.
You got to head up to the lake, but
up north to the lake, exactly.
Not before next week. We've got Device Talks Minnesota happening.
Oh, wait, I can't head up to the lake, Tom?
No, not next week, my friend. Nope. Not any lake. Not
that's
any of
right.
Your 10,000 lakes.
Okay. Now we'll be at the beautiful University of Minnesota campus at their McNamara Alumni Center. When you were here for our Device Talks Minnesota show, it's going to be June 11th. When you were visiting just a few weeks ago, we walked into that McNamara space and you were like, this is a really cool space.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week. I expected to be pleased, but I was wowed. So there was a genuine wow. It was a very cool space. So, like I said, I felt like I was at Starfleet Academy. You feel smarter just walking in the building. So it's going to be a good show. And thanks to many, many folks, including our guest today, Heather Hudnut Page. Heather, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Good to see you, Chris.
Yeah, good to see you.
Heather was instrumental in helping us to put together and will be leading the conversation during our MedTech, Women in MedTech breakfast, which is, of course, as breakfast should, starting off the day. At Device Talks Minnesota. So Heather, want to talk a bit about the program. I know we talked about this back in the MedTech Vision conference last September. That kind of got the ball rolling, and then you and Kayleen Brown have been working hand in hand to put together a powerhouse program.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and it's fun to have the inaugural Device Talks Minnesota this year. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. And we'll be kicking off with a Fearless Leadership Breakfast with women, and I'm really excited about hearing from people about what's changing and what are some of the uncertainties right now with kind of what I would call the big five, right? With tariff uncertainties, what's going to happen there and all admin's work, the cuts in the NIH and the NSF. Okay. And what does that mean for innovation? The FDA cuts, what will that mean for startups, for getting technology out the door, and then the DEI changes, which we know DEI is really important. The diversity is really important as we think about innovation. So we're excited. We've got five senior leaders from the Twin Cities who will be speaking on the panel, and they're all chosen specifically for their ability to talk to those topics and talk about how we lead through that. We've got Carolyn Sleeth from Insulet. So really excited about taking the business approach and sharing how they're managing through these uncertainties. Raven Miller, who leads marketing and marketing communications at Medtronic, and how do you communicate these changes and how do you lead through that? Ellie Humphrey will give us the approach and the perspective of venture capital and the startup world. And then Ann Hauser, who's an executive coach and CEO of Bailey Group. And she'll share with us how she's helping leaders lead through all this uncertainty. So really excited about that panel and then excited about the whole day.
That's great.
Many good topics.
Yeah, it's kind of such an awesome way to start that day. I mean, just having that panel. And I love that word fearless. I mean, I think that's just like really what we have to do right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know in the med tech space, we always have uncertainty and risk, but there's an increasing challenges in front of us, and how we lead through that is really important.
And that particular program fits nicely into the entire day. And we'll go through the newsmakers kind of hit upon some of the high points. But when we built the agenda, we really wanted it to be more of a thematic conversation, focusing less on sort of the personalities and more on the problems and the solutions that folks are having in MedTech. So that's a great way to start the day. Really grateful, Heather, for you taking the time to put that together, and also grateful to MedTech Women for helping us promote it as well. They're great partners of ours, and I know your MedTech Women has some conference news as well, correct?
Yes, they do. Just opened up registration for the next MedTech Vision Conference. In fact, there'll be three of our Minnesota people on some of the panels there. Laura Morey will be the executive interview, which will be fantastic. She is the CMO of Medtronic. We've got Kat Jennings, who's president of a big business at Boston Scientific. And we have Cynthia Yee, who will be talking about the whole deal-making side of the equation. So that's great. And looking forward to that event.
Excellent. So that's happening in September. So folks have time to register for that. Device Talks Minnesota, as you listen to this, it may be sold out. We are technically past the mark where we said no more. I've pleaded for conferences to let in a little more because I think we can, as I said, the space there is kind of so open and vast. I think we can add a little more people, and we're deep into that margin. So by all means, try to register at minnesota.devicetalks.com to attend. If you cannot, I'm sorry about that. But this is the price that comes with a smaller, more intimate event. It sells out, and very, very gratified to have sold out the first year back since that 2019. So thank you to everybody who is attending, and really looking forward to seeing you there. If you can't make it, but you want some MedTech chatter, want to hang with the MedTech folks, Chris and I will be at Target Field. I'm told there's like a nice gathering area in the back where hopefully we'll have.
There we go.
I don't know if it'll be a small group or a large group, or it could just be Chris and me, but we'll be hanging out there and having a good time. So we hope to see you on Thursday as the Twins take on the disappointing Texas Rangers.
There we go.
Not the disappointing Boston Red Sox, the disappointing Texas Rangers.
Twins seem to have been on an upswing lately.
They're
so
surging. The surging Twins, right?
Right. Right.
Yep. All right, Chris Newmark.
All right, go Twinkies. It'll be great, man.
Before we start, how's the pollen over there in Minnesota? I'm getting crushed today. Like, I woke up this morning just feeling like exhausted. Like,
oh yeah, me too. I think there was an extra Flonase spray in my nostrils.
Oh my
city.
God, I am dragging. Oh lordy, lordy, lordy.
At least the smoke cleared out. We've had there's been all the wildfire smoke. It's been.
I don't know why I'm laughing at that. I guess
you're laughing at that.
It's like I'm laughing like ha ha ha.
It's only Canada burning.
I don't know. Geez. To our earlier point, like so much is going on. You kind of have to just sometimes. All right. Well, I'm glad
you gotta ration the general news consumption. Yeah. I mean, I'm paying my subscriptions to the people at the New York Times could do their good work and whatnot, but there's only so much of it you can take.
Yeah, and then I'm hopping over to Connections or Wordle or doing the mini and getting on with my day. And strands
recipes.
For some reason I can't stop strands.
I've been I did a nice baked tofu recipe last night. It was really good.
Tofu,
the heart.
Yum.
It's so good. Yeah.
All
like
right.
Herb lemon baked thing. It was good. Good
we'll,
times.
We'll put that recipe in the show notes, of course. So you also can enjoy
Chris's Christmas. Herby tofu bake. Gosh.
Newmark, let's hit the newsmakers. What do we got going on? What's number five? And full disclosure, all of these newsmakers are Minnesota focused, and also they will give us an opportunity to tell you a little bit more about Device Talks Minnesota. So at the end of this, I don't want you to feel tricked or beguiled because
why is this
you realize
Minnesota?
That, wait a minute. Yeah. They bragged about their conference every single time. So heads up, but it's some really, really fascinating stuff coming. So Chris.
Yeah, because I widened the net instead of just doing like 1 week. I did a full month and I kind of pulled things that were related to the things we're going to be doing at Device Talks Minnesota next week. So, I mean, just to start out at number five of the Newmarkers Newsmakers, less than a month ago, we had Solventum, beating the street in their first quarter earnings, and they upped their revenue guidance. So this is like really exciting news. I mean, I think there's a lot of interest in how Solventum, which is the former 3M Healthcare that spun out last year, is now gonna perform now that it's on its own, and it's got Brian Hansen as a CEO. I mean, Hansen led Zimmer Biomet through a period of really brought a lot of energy to ZB that Yvonne Tornos is continuing on as CEO there at ZB, but we've got Hansen running Solventum here in the Twin Cities.
Yep, and he after taking the job, he brought with him Rachel Ellingson. She's the chief strategic officer at Solventum. She had the same post at Zimmer Biomet. She actually was a guest on our Ortho Innovation Talks podcast last year, actually. I'll be sitting down with Rachel, and we're going to sort of unpack where things are at Solventum and where things are headed, since she's helping lead the strategy forward. So so excited to shine some light on Solventum.
I really think Rachel's one of the top strategists in MedTech right now. I mean, when she was at St. Jude Medical, she played an important role in the sale of that company to Abbott. Then she played an important role as a chief strategy officer at ZB, and now she's at Solventum. So I mean, it's going to be exciting to see what she does there.
Exciting to see their early success, right? As they created their new business, so very exciting. It'll be good to hear from Rachel at the meeting next week.
Chris Newmark, let's roll on to number four.
you know, number four on the list. This is, just, you know, by the way, the Solventum story was from Associate Editor Sean Hooley. Like around the same time, I wrote an article about Inspire announcing that, you know, they're fully launching, they're going to be fully launching their next gen system in the U.S. You know, that was like slated to happen in May. And this was, you know, the Inspire 5 system, coming just a few quarters earlier than expected. But Inspire's been, you know, one of the great, you know, success stories here in the Twin Cities. I mean, this implantable kind of pacemaker-like device that can treat sleep apnea and kind of attractive to some people who are like, you know what, I don't want to be, you know, sleeping all the time with a CPAP strapped to my face. Like I could have this, you know, they're willing to go to have this, you know, go for having this pacemaker device that could, you know, treat it instead. But just for, you know, this current fiscal year, I mean, they're sticking with a full year revenue guidance of like growing like 17% to 19% over last year. I mean, so I mean, just really amazing growth.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And we've got a great panel that Kayleen Brown put together. She'll be leading the discussion, a NeuroStim success story, how engineers continue to improve upon a treatment for obstructive sleep apnea. And she'll be leading that conversation at 1:15. And we got to see the Inspire Tower.
Yes.
In the rainstorm during the MedTech Nerd Tour. So
yes, that heavy rainstorm. Like we were like, should we go and do like a selfie video? Like say, look, we're Inspire Tower over the West End area. Yeah, and we're like,
we talked about our shame last week that we just refused to get out of the car. Our commitment only goes so far.
I didn't know if I wanted to do a Jim Cantore impression.
No, exactly.
Day, so yes. All right.
Well, I remember when that technology, when Tim Herbert first brought that up when he was at Medtronic, and then spun it out. So it has been super exciting to watch what's happened there. A big congrats to Tim and his team.
Yeah.
That's a
and it's a great example, too, of kind of how, you know, over the years here in Minnesota, we've, you know, developed this like pacemaker technology to run, you know, leads to the heart. And we've seen all this innovation around like, yeah, you know, we could run leads, you know, to exactly, you know, to the head, you know, basically, and do things up there, you know, treat sleep apnea, you know, brain disorders, like all kinds of, you know, really exciting uses for it.
Absolutely. All right. Great item. And looking forward to the Inspire conversation. Chris Newmarker, what do we have at number three?
Well, number three on the list, we had last week, you know, the passing away of, you know, Robert Jarvik in New York, you know, so not a direct Minnesota connection, but Jarvik, I mean, he was the principal designer of the Jarvik, you know, 7, which was, you know, the first artificial permanent heart that was implanted in a human all the way back in the early, you know, 1980s. And, you know, this technology, it continues to advance. So, you know, even as, you know, we say goodbye to like one of this great pioneer in the cardiology space, you know, we've got, you know, these companies doing some like really exciting work with artificial hearts right now. And we have, you know, Bivacor is, you know, moving, you know, forward with their technology, which, you know, kind of, you know, resembles the kind of like rotor spinning and, you know, levitated inside of a pump that, you know, you see with, you know, the Abbott LVADs, you know, and they're moving forward. And then we're also, you know, seeing, you know, Syncardia, which is the only company with a commercially available total artificial heart. They're generating they're developing a next generation Emperor implantable artificial heart technology that you know they're driving for this to be like fully implantable, or at least mostly implantable. Like there'd still be like a battery pack outside, but you know the actual all those pumping mechanisms and whatnot would be inside the body. And you know we're gonna have Syncardia's CEO at Device Talks Minnesota talking about this next gen technology.
And you had the CEO Patrick Snegelsberg on the podcast 2 or 3 months ago, I think.
Yeah. So, we had him on earlier this year. Yeah.
So folks can check that out. But it's one of those great opportunities where you have someone on the podcast, and then you're like, well, I would really like to see that in person. And I said, Chris, can you give Patrick Snegelsberg a call? And he was glad to come up and give a presentation. Yeah. So he'll be in the Heritage Gallery, which will be a room where we'll have 20-minute presentations focused on technology. So we'll get a good quick deep dive into Syncardia. We'll have presentations by Motif Neurotech, by Medtronic, by Andromeda surgical robotics company. So lots going on in that cool Heritage Gallery room. So thank you, Patrick, for coming on up.
Be fantastic. So number two on the list, we've got Medtronic. Back in February, won FDA approval for its BrainSense adaptive deep brain stimulation platform, and another example of like this pacemaker like technology of it, adding in all this software to make the therapy like so much more adaptive to treating Parkinson's disease. So we'll be having a senior distinguished engineer from Medtronic at Device Talks Minnesota, like talking more about like all the work they're doing with this adaptive deep brain stimulation technology.
Life changing for many people with Parkinson's.
Yeah,
it's a really exciting innovation.
No, that's great. And again, he'll be in the same tech room, same technical talks room in the Heritage Gallery. So looking forward to that conversation. All right, Chris Neumarker, let's wrap it up. What's the big
number
one?
Number one on the list. Boston Scientific received FDA clearance earlier this year for its Bolt intravascular lithotripsy IVL system, which kind of brings them into this like really exciting IVL space of, using pressure waves to, break up, calcium and, acoustic pressure waves to, break up calcium inside blood vessels. We're going to be having a whole, it's going to be putting them more in competition with, Shockwave Medical, which, Johnson & Johnson has acquired. And, we're going to be having a whole panel of Dr. Ken Stein from Boston Scientific. They're a global chief medical officer. I've sat on panels in the past with Dr. Stein, and he's just fantastic. Scott Nelson, who's the CEO of Fastwave Medical. I mean, Scott's great, to has a lot of insights and contributes advice articles to Mass Device. And then we're also going to have Robert Chisina from AVS on that panel. So it's going to be like just a great panel discussing how IVL could advance vascular care.
And of course, Scott Nelson is also the host of the OG MedTech podcast. We have to give a shout out to the MedSider podcast that he started, gosh, probably like 2008, so coming in on 20 years for him. So good to have a good strong podcast representation in the medtech industry.
It'll be fantastic. And don't worry, if the pollen's still really bad, I'll bring some Afrin for Tom, so you can just clear out the sinuses. He'll be like wide awake. It'll be amazing.
But once again, folks, give it a try. We probably will be sold out, but go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register. Start the day with the Women in MedTech Breakfast, which will be led by Heather Hudnut Page. And got a great panel there. And then we've got a lot of great conversations throughout the day. And we mentioned earlier on the MedTech Vision conference, if you want more information, go to medtechwomen.org. There's a tab there for the MedTech Vision conference, and that's happening on September 9th in Menlo Park at the Rosewood Sandhill. Very nice place, by the way. Far too nice for me, but I enjoy it. I've gone there the last 2 years, and hopefully we'll be out there again. So it's a good time. So, all right. Heather, thanks again for the support.
Absolutely. Great to be on the call with the two of you, and really looking forward to next week.
Yeah.
Same here.
It's going to be great.
Been a long time coming. All right. Thanks, everybody. All right. Well, before we begin our keynote conversation with Ivan Tornos of Zimmer Biomet, I'd like to introduce our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. She talks with this episode's sponsor, Protolabs.
Rob Young, Global Product Director at Protolabs, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
So Rob, this is the first time I have the pleasure of sitting down with you and learning more about you and learning more about Protolabs. So with that in mind, can you tell us about Protolabs?
Absolutely. So Protolabs is a digital manufacturer that works with medical device companies from prototyping to production with really unmatched speed and reliability. So that unique combination of speed and quality has led us to working with 96% of Fortune 500 companies within the medical device industry. And as a manufacturer with factories throughout the U.S., along with a network of manufacturing partners throughout the globe. We work with a wide range of innovation leaders who, you know, who gain supply chain agility through our diversified manufacturing model. And we've had a unique viewpoint within the medical industry as we've worked with companies both big and small, you know, throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, black swan supply chain events, the evolving regulatory environments, all of that kind of stuff. And now, as they navigate the current tariff landscape as well, right? So we've historically worked with a lot of companies to accelerate med device development. And today we're highly focused on evolving that business, you know, to really better meet the needs of the medical device customers throughout the product lifecycle. So we're truly the largest and most comprehensive digital manufacturing ecosystem.
Rob, I had no idea that you had such an extensive reach. So thank you for that overview. We're going to take a really quick break from my interview with Rob Young to bring you our keynote interview with Yvonne Tornos of Zimmer Biomet. But if you can't wait to learn more about Protolabs and my interview with Rob Young, please visit Protolabs' website at protolabs.com. That's P-R-O-T-O, labs, L-A-B-S.com.
I'd like to invite up our keynote opening guest, Yvonne Tornos, of CEO of Zimmer Biomet, and very thrilled to have him here. We'll go over his background, kind of treat it like a podcast interview, and learn about what brought him into medtech, and of course where Zimmer Biomet is headed into the future. I'm very excited to have you here, Yvonne. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. And it's amazing to be called the Taylor Swift of orthopedics. I've gotten a few compliments in my life, but that's a tough one, so thank you.
I didn't give her the Taylor Swift of anything. Yeah, walk, own that. All right, so we'll get into your background in a moment, but I want to explore, if you don't mind, your use of social media. You posted last week, and I was going to get into it later in the conversation, but you posted last week a tremendous photo and post from Warsaw, Indiana, talking about where your implants are made and how proud you are to have 70% of them made in the U.S. As people in this audience who are, I'm hoping, looking to expand their social media posts, how do you really resonate with your audience. I wonder, when you're posting, and I know you do your own posting, who are you envisioning? Are you envisioning your employees? Are you envisioning your customers? Are you envisioning patients? I know I envision these folks when I post, but you've got a larger universe than I do.
All right, let me start by saying thanks to everybody for being here today, and thanks to you for hosting today's event. I'm going to start with a public compliment, unsolicited. I'm here because of you. I got up this morning at 3:45 in the morning to be here. I got a lot going on. I'm going to Washington, D.C. Later today. But I'm here because I find you to be one of the most influential people in medtech. What you do inspires me. What you do is changing how we think about the patient innovation. So kudos to you, Tom, for doing what you're doing. Who do I think of as a post? I think about the patient, I think about the customer, and I think about the employee. I don't think about shareholders. I don't think about me. Do I want to have more followers in social media? I don't make a living out of social media. If I can help you, yes, I want you to follow me. If I cannot help you, I really don't care if you follow me or not. I do my own post. I do my own LinkedIn. I'm not on Instagram or anything like that. My HR department wants me to post less. My compliance department wants me to post less. Some of my coworkers want me to post less. And some of my competitors want me to post less. And that's what drives me to post more and more and more and more. I'm trying to have a voice. I'm passionate about what we do. And in 2025, if you're not active in the right social media, in the right way, with authenticity, then you're not being relevant. So that's what I do, what I do.
That's so well said. And you're right. Authenticity is critical. Who we're talking to now is who I see when you post. So
you can tell that I do my own post because you can actually read the Spanish accent in my post. So, you know, I got typos, I use the wrong grammar, so it's me. It really is me. I don't have a communications guru doing all that stuff.
Let's talk about the passion that's driving you in your personal journey into medtech. We talked earlier this year. I was happy to be down at Joe Mulling's studio, and we talked a bit about what drew you to medtech. What was your first experience with healthcare is sad and rather tragic. Could you walk us into your past experiences and how it brought you to this, where you
are
today?
Sure, Tom. I'll give you the 2-minute answer to a very deep question. I am passionate about healthcare because I am inspired by purpose. My father passed away when I was 5 years old. He was 45 years old at the time, cancer. Shortly after that, one of my uncles became my father figure. He actually died 9 months later, leukemia, so brain cancer and leukemia, actually both. He died at the age of 45. Then later on, my next father figure, who was my brother, died at the age of 45. I'm about to become 50, although I look like I'm 78, inspires me to do something that helps others. I cannot say it any more clear than that. It inspires me to do something that helps others. I've been fascinated by disease for my entire life. I don't think there is a better job to have than to work in medtech, to be able to transform other people's lives, to alleviate the pain of others. And that's what I do, what I do. And it's not the money. It is not the fame. It is helping others.
And that's a tremendous story. And I think nearly everyone in this room has had benefited from healthcare and from medtech in some way. Yet I feel like our industry is one that sort of operates in the shadows. We're not getting the, and nor do we necessarily want the attention of a social media company or such. But for an industry that drives so much and helps so many people, I feel like we're underexposed. Why do you think that is? Why do we not get the attention that I think we deserve?
Yeah, I was having this conversation with Scott Whitaker. He's the CEO of AdvaMed, actually yesterday. The reason why we don't have the exposure, the reason why we don't have the voice that we should be having is because historically, when you think about the ecosystem of customers, what I call the 4P model, we've been talking to one of those 4Ps, which is the physician, right? When you think about healthcare, our customers are patients, physicians, providers, and payers. Payers being, you know, the government in most cases around the world. And again, we, MedTech, have been talking to physicians. We go into an operating room, we do the surgery, we go have dinner, some drinks with a doctor, and that's about it. When you think about pharma, they've been talking to patients directly, direct to patient, direct to consumer for a long period of time. When you think about pharma, they've been doing advocacy for a long time. Again, going back to the conversation with Scott, in this world of tariffs and everything going on, people in DC don't even know who we are and what we do in the way that they should. We get bucketed in the same bucket as pharma. You guys are the pharma guys. Well, we're not. We do a lot of things like pharma, but we're not pharma. So we got to do a much better job in engaging the patient, which we are through some DTC campaigns. We have to do a much better job in talking to payers and providers, talk about how we do take cost out of the system in addition to taking care of patients. So I think we need a more powerful voice. We need to talk to all 4Ps, and we got to have a more powerful voice in places like DC.
Should patients know what brand of knee they just got? And do they know? I don't think they do. I think they say, I got a knee replacement, but if I were to ask them, they'd
be like, don't.
Yeah.
They don't. We got to educate them. And that's why we hired this gentleman by the name of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I had to say that in the first 5 minutes.
That is who's a, that? Is that?
Oh, come on. The Terminator? Terminator.
He's the next Taylor Swift of
that actors, is a badass move. Let me just say that clearly in English. That is a badass move to get Arnold Schwarzenegger. Look, the lights went off as I say that. We need to educate patients. We need to educate patients. Let me use orthopedics as an example, or arthritis, osteoarthritis. There are 600 million people on earth that are living in pain with arthritis. 5% of those, the lion's share, by the way, is osteoarthritis. 5% of those actually get educated on what is a potential solution. You can do the math here quickly. 570 million are doing nothing about it. And again, not every one of those 570 million patients needs to get a knee replacement or a hip replacement, but a lot of them should. Or at the very least, they should get educated on potential solutions. It may be an injection, it may be physical therapy, it may be one of my implants, it may be something else. So we gotta have a conversation directly to patients, because those patients sitting in the sidelines, in addition to living in pain, are costing money to the system and are creating an additional burden that we don't need to be having. So yes, absolutely, we need to have a direct conversation with that patient.
We will be taking some questions at the end of the discussion, so I'll go through my questions and folks think of some of your own. If someone from the team could please grab a handheld microphone, we'd like to be able to get your questions on mic, and please let us know who you are and where you're from. So let's talk a bit more about the orthopedics industry and Zimmer. When I started covering the industry a long time ago,
Ortho didn't get a lot of attention from technology, from VCs, from startups. It was like, oh, that's all set. We figured out that problem. Got a near 100% satisfaction for large joint implants. And yeah, things like biomaterials and some of the things we talked about today, we're beginning to get attention. But there's over the past 10 years, it seems like our industry's adopting so many new technologies that, again, we've touched upon about a little bit, robotics, sensors, 3D printing. What do you think is, what started the drive of that innovation? What led to the industry saying we can do better?
Sure. Well, a couple of things before I answer the question. Number one, joint replacement satisfaction rates is not 100%. So in hips, hip replacement is close to 100%. In knee replacement, it's actually 80%. And that's something we're working on. And we believe we can get to that 100% by thinking beyond the implant. Within the implant, but beyond the implant. In terms of the VCs not paying attention to orthopedics, they better be. They better be. This is a $50 billion with a B. $50 billion industry that today is growing 4 to 5%. And I do think that growth rate is going to dramatically increase if we do our job on awareness, going back to a lot of people living in pain. What changed over the last 10 years, your question, in terms of innovation? Humility. Humility. We started to transition the conversation from selling products to Dr. Sigman to thinking about the customer, those four P's, what are those problems, and then go right back to thinking what is the solution. The solution can be a better implant. The solution could be robotics. The solution could be prevention. The solution could be something else. So I think that we, and we is all of us, not just Zimmer Biomet, the entire orthopedic industry, changed the mindset about 10 years ago. Start with the problem, and how do we, through technology, through surgical algorithms, come up with a solution. Along came robotics. You know, kudos to Stryker for being first to market in that regard. Robotics drives accuracy, in some cases faster, better, more predictable outcomes. And then it was artificial intelligence, 3D printing, biomaterials. And today the conversations that we're having are just mind-blowing. As I mentioned to you recently, we're looking at humanoids. Can we have humanoids instead of nurses in operating rooms? Can we truly predict versus explore outcomes through AI? Can we restore versus replace? I tell people, I want to put my company out of business. I run mostly an implant company. 80% of my revenue is implants, 20% is something else. I envision a day where we don't need to replace somebody's knees. We can restore the anatomy of someone's knees. So the conversations we're having right now are fascinating. And if I'm a VC, if I'm in a startup world, I want to be part of this $50 billion conversation, which is going to explode.
So how has that changed Zimmer Biomet? And how does a company incorporate, a company that's been, and as you and Joe mentioned in the conversation we had earlier, a metals and plastics business, how do you evolve or become a technology business? And how do you incorporate the mindset and the expectations of these new technologies and really change the culture of a company?
So it starts with two key areas. So to change a company, MedTech is about innovation and commercial execution. So to have bolder innovation, you got to change capabilities. At times, you got to change location, and you got to change partners. So when I started with Zimmer Biomet 6 years ago, most of our innovation was in Warsaw, Indiana, a great place. But it may not be the place to do all innovation. Today, we have design centers in Northern California. We have 450 associates in Montreal doing AI, robotics, and whatnot. We got partnerships outside of the US, from Israel to Europe, you name it. We're all over the place. So we're thinking about innovation in a different place. Where we innovate, who we partner with. As I tell people, we don't do research and development only. We do search and development. We got humility, second time I said. Sometimes we believe we need to buy versus make and design, so we're changing the innovation story. And then commercial execution, we partner with different people. I see Joe Mullings here in the third row. Different capabilities. The same people that made us great in selling implants over the last 100 years are not the same people that we need in today's environment. So who are those individuals that can deliver on the new Zimmer Biomet value proposition? How do we get better or best commercial execution? Different people. It may not be people that have been selling implants for the last 20 years. We're hiring all kinds of people. We hire from bank tellers to architects to people that have never been exposed to healthcare, but they do have critical thinking skills. They understand the customer in a different way. and they do things in a different way. So changing innovation, changing commercial execution.
So what do you see Zimmer Biomet becoming in 10 years? Is it a different company?
Absolutely. Otherwise, somebody with a different accent will be here on the stage. We aspire to be the boldest medtech company on earth. I know it sounds like a hyperbolic statement, but we aspire to be and we will become the boldest medtech company on earth. And we're going to start with orthopedics and then we'll move in other areas. And being the boldest medtech company on earth is having the courage to solve some of the most meaningful challenges in healthcare. We spoke about awareness. We can't have people living in pain. And we're going to solve that problem. We're going to solve that problem through digital means, through partnerships like the one we have with the governor, through strategic relationships. But we will be the company that cracks the code on awareness. Then it comes infection. People die in operating rooms. And I'm not talking about somewhere in Africa or Latin America. I'm talking right here in the U.S. You know, 1 to 2% infection rates. You think it's a low number, but once you get it, the probability of you dying is actually higher with some cancers. So we will be that bold company that solves infection through technology, surgical algorithms, and whatnot. Efficiency. We believe that we can reduce the time that you're a patient. If you're an orthopedic patient, you could live in pain for years. I believe we can reduce that time span. I believe that, as Dr. Sigmund said, you may not need to go to a hospital. I believe that surgery that used to be 2 hours can be, in some cases, 30 minutes. I believe we can make it faster without compromising outcomes. And that's the fourth problem, outcomes. As I just alluded to, 80% of patients are satisfied with knee replacement. I don't think about the 80%, I think about that other 20%. We have to be the company that guarantees, capital letters, 100% satisfaction rates. So 10 years from now, through technology, through different capabilities, through different partnerships, we are the company that is solving for awareness, for infection, for efficiency, for outcomes. And in the way to do that, we're going to be thinking about the other stuff that I was talking about. Can we put Zimmer Biomet out of business? Can we restore versus replace? Can we leverage data in a more meaningful way? And yes, can we get these lessons in this pilot called orthopedics and transfer these learnings to other areas? So 10 years from now, we're not just an orthopedic company. 10 years from now, we are deeper in craniomaxillofacial thoracic. We're doing things in cardiac. We're doing things in consumer healthcare. It's just going to be a totally different company.
How are you viewing, we talked with Scott Sigmund about ASCs, and we'll talk about that later today. I know this has been an area that you're giving a lot of attention to. How are you approaching the rise of ASCs, and what does that mean for Zimmer Biomet's future?
It's a total change. When I started with the company again six and a half years ago, 2% of our sales came from ASCs. Today, the number is north of 20%. And all the data we're getting shows that in the next 5 years, around 40 to 60% of all cases are going to move to an ASC. And it's not lost on me, that's a wide range, 40 to 60. I mean, that's a pretty big delta. Well, that in itself tells you that nobody really knows what the number is, but it's huge. And it's starting here in the US, and it's going to go to my home continent of Europe. It's going to go to Asia. It's going to be a global phenomenon. So how we're approaching it, we call it the 3P model. You know, partnerships, who do we need to partner with? People, what kind of people do we need to hire for ASCs? It's a different skill set. And again, working with people like Joe in that regard. And then it's about products. The same products that we sell in a hospital may not be the same products that we sell in an ASC. We got to be even faster and even smarter. And in the background of all of this, we're rethinking our contracting capabilities. Time matters. Time matters. But time really, really matters in an ASC. And time really, really matters in an ASC where the physician is the owner. So we want to change the way we do contracting. Here's a data point that most people don't pay attention to. When you think about orthopedics, in the bundle of care of orthopedics, 15% of the cost is we, the bad guys. Medical supplies, pharmaceuticals, implant companies. 85% is something else. It's inefficiencies in surgery. It's making a surgery way too long. It's having too much labor in the operating room. Is not driving efficiency, how you go from one operating room to another one. It's readmission rates. It's a bunch of other stuff. That conversation is very acute in an ASC. So we partner with some of the boldest thinkers in the ASC space in reducing that 85% and engaging in a contracting conversation about that 85%. Doc, owner of an ASC, if I guarantee you that I can lower potential complications, if I can reduce 20, 30% of surgical time, if I can reduce sterilization cost, if I can reduce all these things that are part of the 85%, can I be your preferred vendor? And those are conversations we're having. And that's how we're going to win in the ASC moving forward.
And how does that influence or impact your relationships with the larger hospitals, the more traditional settings?
Yeah, we're going to piss them off, oh, for sure. But as the frog here said, you know, some patients will go into a hospital environment. So I do think this is a double dipping effect. I don't think it's 40 to 60% of cases going to an ASC and then hospitals run out of business. Orthopedic devices or orthopedic surgery, I should say, are the second highest margin contributor in a hospital setting. And I hate to talk about margins as we're talking about patients, but let's have that conversation. Second highest margin contributor, number one is cardio procedures. So if you're running a hospital in the US with a 2% EBITDA, which is very low, you know, 2% profit in all the volumes that you go through, the one procedure you don't want to lose is orthopedic cases. So I do think hospitals will reinvent themselves, will attract some of the sicker patients. They'll do things to continue to have patient volume. And given the 570 million people in the sidelines, I do think there is plenty of room for some of them to go to the ASC, those who are not truly sick, and many of them still go into a hospital environment. So I do think it's a double dipping effect.
Going back to new technologies, where are you looking for the devices of tomorrow? You obviously have a great internal R&D program, but you're also investing in M&A. You just closed on Paragon 28. How are you looking at the broader market for startups? How heavily do you anticipate leaning on M&A to bring in new technologies? What do you think will happen? How do you think you'll find the new technologies we've been talking about?
So we gotta diversify Zimmer Biomet. That's a fact. You know, we've been in business for 100 years. We've been mostly an orthopedic company, a great orthopedic company, but we need to diversify ourselves. You know, roughly today, 80% of our revenue comes from core orthopedics. It includes recon and what we call SET, extremities, sports, trauma, and whatnot. 10 years from now, we're going to be less than 50% orthopedics. So for us to be less than 50% orthopedics, great in orthopedics, but less than 50% the entire value of the company, we got to go into other areas. What are we looking at? We're looking at a roadmap of three parts, tier one, tier two, tier three. In tier one is faster growth areas within orthopedics and adjacencies, technology, data, infection, all these things that solve those problems that I talked about. Tier two is logical white spaces or adjacencies to orthopedics. Again, love to be bigger and bolder in sports medicine. We're investing in biologics. We're investing in biomaterials. We want to be the company that restores versus replaces. We're looking at early models of gene therapy. There's a lot of stuff in the tier two. And then tier three is transferring the know-how, all this stuff we learn in orthopedics, to other areas. And yes, I do envision a Zimmer Biomet that is active in areas like neuro, active in some areas of cardiac surgery. Most people don't realize we have a cardiac surgery business. We do external closure procedures and whatnot. So yeah, I do think, and consumer, I do think that that's the third tier. And just to answer, one more data point to answer and close the answer here, we are rethinking our capital allocation strategy. So we started with what I call modest diversification, and today we're thinking more boldly about diversification. We were too obsessed with short-term deliverables, EPS dilution and whatnot. And as of now, we're thinking more boldly about diversification. So we are going to put the balance sheet to work. We recently acquired a great company called Paragon 28. And that is not the last company we're going to be acquiring throughout my tenure.
We're going to take a quick pause on our interview with Yvonne Tornos of Zimmer Biomet to bring back our episode sponsor, Protolabs, and my interview with Rob Young, Global Product Director at Protolabs. Okay, Rob. So I got a better understanding of how Protolabs supports the medical technology industry. And as a manufacturer so embedded in this industry, what do you see as some of the most important factors shaping medical product development today?
So that's a big question. There's a number of answers to that, I think. But from, you know, what we see, one of the biggest themes that we hear about from our customers in the medtech industry specifically today is that they're highly focused on taking a patient-centric approach to product development, right? So this could mean a lot of things, but where we certainly see this is in the rate of innovation of novel products and therapies, right? So we're very often the go-to partner for early stage iterative development. And of course, you know, new innovative disruptive technologies often require more iterative development cycles. And so we're obsessed with helping our partners get medical products to market faster than anyone else in the world. And they find a lot of value in that, especially as they're focusing on patient centricity. Secondly, we're looking at today's regulatory landscape, right? So I think there's a general sentiment of uncertainty around changing guidelines, you know, global harmonization and beyond that influence product development timelines. And so we see our customers needing to move with a faster pace through the prototyping stages and then rapidly iterate with demand for parts in days, you know, not weeks or months as they adapt to that uncertainty. One great example of that falls under changing material regulations. So governing bodies in both Europe and parts of the US are moving to reduce PFAS in plastic materials. And those are often associated with things like flame retardant additives in plastics. The supply chain hasn't quite caught up to that regulation in terms of international material sourcing and things like that. So this might mean that companies need to pivot supply chain strategies, qualify new materials quickly, those types of things, right? So this is really only increasing the need for speed and agility within manufacturing partners. And as the industry weathers and conforms to, you know, emerging regulations, that elevates the need for suppliers that aren't just fast, but can also deliver consistently, repeatably, and with a level of quality required in, you know, a high regulation space like medtech. And then lastly, what I would say is tariffs are now a primary area of focus, right? If we look globally, services like injection molding, for example, have a strong tie to some of the tariff-impacted regions that we're talking about today. So we're seeing trends like onshoring and consolidation in the supply base to mitigate tariff impacts as well.
But there's a lot to unpack here, Rob, from regulations to tariffs. How have you seen medical companies adapt to these factors?
Yeah, great question. So fortunately, you know, for the medtech industry, the spirit of fast adaptation isn't like a new concept. You know, they're used to pressures and, you know, delivering in a world that's rapidly evolving. And it's really kind of been the norm since COVID, right? So that said, demand for innovation within the industry has risen rapidly as new technologies emerge, right? So these long existing pressures have established product development timelines that are built on, you know, speed, flexibility, agility, those types of things. And really dating back to the emergence of COVID-19 again, you know, we've seen many of our customers value speed in the product development process because that speed really equals flexibility, right? So the faster you can move, the easier it is to iterate to reduce risk, but also to pivot and change strategies if you need to. And so, you know, responding to today's tariff landscape is another test for medical supply chains. And we see more of our customers not only onshoring their manufacturing partners, but also, you know, even building their own facilities to lessen the impact of tariffs, for example, or nearshoring to regions like Costa Rica or something like that. So the Fortune 100 large companies that we work with have moved forward in onshoring with the mindset of moving manufacturing closer to consumption. But, you know, if a company is working through an FDA hurdle or something that's changed, digital manufacturers like Protolabs can really reduce the impact by enabling this kind of like lightning fast iteration to adjust and recover, right? So I think probably the newer development is that, you know, this now extends beyond prototyping and into production manufacturing as well. And, you know, we were previously recognized as a prototyping tool, Protolabs, right? But we've really worked on quickly evolving to meet production demands for customers. And so that kind of translates to this ability to combine the speed with more robust quality standards that are really necessary for production medical device.
Well, I really want to utilize our time together and your expertise and have you help me with a question that we get all the time. How can manufacturers meet the demands of medtech during continued supply chain unrest?
Great question. And I would say agility, 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 right? So the importance of supply chain agility really can't be overstated for our medical device customers, certainly. At the same time, onboarding new suppliers is a complex process to ensure that each one meets the quality standards required for their, you know, unique application, right? So as an industry, suppliers who can offer supply chain agility with speed while meeting the more stringent quality standards will be a vital tool in today's focus on supply chain resilience. You know, Protolabs, for example, we have a unique model leveraging, you know, our own owned US-based factories as well as a global network of manufacturing partners. to serve as a full lifecycle partner from prototyping to production. And so our own factories offer injection molding, CNC machining, 3D printing, sheet metal fabrication, and they really provide that industry-leading speed and quality for prototyping and end-use parts. But then we've got, you know, our global network of manufacturing partners that can also step in with a breadth of capabilities that are highly vetted to meet the needs of the industry as well, right? So the goal overall for us and our evolution is to take a typical development timeline of like 1 to 2 years in medical device and reduce it to potentially months to get to market and then work with our customers to support in commercialization phases as well to keep them in market and growing, right? So that's really where we're focused and where we're headed for the future.
Fantastic. Well, Rob Young, Global Product Director at Protolabs, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you very much as well. This was great.
And for our audience, if you want to know more about the world's largest and most comprehensive digital manufacturing ecosystem, Protolabs, please visit www.protolabs.com. That's protolabs.com. And now we bring you the conclusion of our interview with Yvonne Tornos, CEO of Zimmer Biomet.
And I want to unpack one piece before we move on to the next type of questions. The partnership with Arnold Schwarzenegger, how did that come to be? Was this something in the...
Sorry, say that again?
How did your partnership with Arnold Schwarzenegger come to be? Was it something that you... that the board determined or you determined earlier on, we need to ally ourselves with someone who's a great public figure? Did it come from an external... I'm just curious how that all came to be, because I think it's fantastic. I think we're all excited by it, and I think it's an important message. But I'm curious, it's not something that I think would typically come up in the conversation at a medtech company.
I am so conflicted right now because I'm tempted to tell you the true story and the corporate story.
We'll stop recording, okay?
I'm going to answer in the middle. The true story I'll tell you over some drinks. The true story actually started, you know, over some drinks. I was in Hollywood, California. I got a dear friend of mine who manages talent out there. I was at a dinner with some celebrities. And at some point, somebody looked at me and said, hey, you, the pharma guy, going back to people don't know the difference between pharma and medtech, if you could pick any celebrity to be your spokesperson, who would you pick? And I'm looking at the room. I won't give the names, but you know, we're looking at 4 or 5 very prominent celebrities in the table. Arnold Schwarzenegger was not one of them. And blame it on my third vodka gimlet for that dinner. I just said, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then, you know, the 5 celebrities just look at me with disappointment. And then somebody from the other side of the table is like, well, why would you choose the governor? And I said, because I envision a campaign that says, terminate your pain today with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then I proceeded to fake an Austrian accent, which it was horrendous. But at the end of that pitch, somebody said to me, well, I happen to know Arnold Schwarzenegger. Would you like to meet the governor? And 4 or 5 weeks later, I was in Brentwood, California, wearing lederhosen pants, you know, at his October Fest party, the governor's October Fest party. That sounds pretty cool, by the way. And I was having a conversation about what we do. I was having a conversation about creating a movement about movement. I was having a conversation about you, governor, being a partner with us in terminating pain around the world. I was talking about the purpose of the company. I was talking about all these things. And at the end, he said, look, you speak very fast. You got a really, really shitty accent. Who's he to talk, right? But I like the way you think. And if you allow me to be a real designer of the campaign, I want to partner with you. And he said, oh, by the way, I don't need the money. I'm worth $1.1 billion. I used to be worth $2.2 billion, but I got a divorce. So I don't need the money. What I do need is to make sure that we do something that is meaningful. So that's a hybrid between the real story and the not so real story, but it's probably 98% accurate. And what I will tell you is that we knew we had to do something on awareness, and you can't find somebody better, bigger, bolder, and more authentic than Arnold Schwarzenegger to work in this campaign. This gentleman, 77-year-old guy, truly wants to make a difference. I know Google Arnold Schwarzenegger net worth. He does not need Zimmer Biomet to make a living, but he wants to be relevant, and relevant he is.
That's fantastic. That question is not here in the paper, and I was praying that the answer would be that good, and you exceeded my expectations, so thanks very much. Just to wrap up, and then we'll get ready for Q&A, speaking about the broader medical device industry, we're facing a lot of external uncertainty, and when I drew these questions up, the tariffs were still in place, and they may be again in a month, I'm not sure. But the FDA tariffs, et cetera, economic uncertainty. How are you viewing the bigger picture at the moment, and where does the medtech industry fit in? I know you're working closely with AdvaMed on.
Look, I'm an optimist. I think logic prevails. So I can't speak about the entire industry or the entire business ecosystem, but within medtech, just a couple of data points. We, as a medtech industry, don't have a trade imbalance, the U.S. medtech industry. So said simply, we actually export far more than we import, right? So that's data point number one. Data point number two, we are roughly a $500 billion industry that employs 3 million people in the U.S. alone. We deal with patients. We deal with patients. You know, with all due respect to other industries, we're not selling couches or cars or smart tablets or whatever you want to call it. We deal with patients. And we do a hell of a job at it. So I think we had the right people talking to Washington. I'm pretty optimistic that at some point logic is going to prevail. In the first administration, tariffs in medtech were an exception, or we were exempted from tariffs. I do think with time, and I hope it's not a long time, and with data, the right people will make the right decisions around medtech. If it doesn't happen, here's what I tell people. We've gone through far worse. And we'll leverage this crisis to become better. Think about the companies that are truly relevant in medtech. Medtronic's been around 75 years. Johnson & Johnson, 120 years. Becton Dickinson, 100 years. Smith & Nephew, 165 years. Stryker's been around for a while. We've been around 100 years. We've seen it all. We're going to reinvent ourselves. You know, I like to quote Winston Churchill, never waste a good crisis. And in this quote-unquote crisis, we're going to reinvent ourselves. Maybe there are different ways to do supply. Maybe there are different ways to do manufacturing. Maybe there are faster ways to innovate. Maybe there is a conversation around global partnerships that we need to have. Maybe we need different people talking to people in Washington, D.C. So I'm actually very optimistic about where this is heading. So no, I don't think this is the end of the world. We started in Warsaw, Indiana in 1927. I like to remind people that Calvin Coolidge was the president. Number 30. So now we're on number 47. So that's 17 administrations. And throughout the whole time, we have seen Great Depressions, World War II, Korean conflict, the 60s, the Vietnam War. And we are here standing. And we're going to be here for the next 1,000 years. So no, I am not concerned about tariffs. I'm paying attention to that. That's why I'm going to Washington, D.C. I'm concerned about the patient, and we're going to prevail.
And when we talked earlier on, and we'll open up for questions after this, about the tariffs, the uncertainty of it, you made an interesting point. You compared it to COVID, the period of COVID. It was something we just hadn't necessarily dealt with before. How did COVID change crisis management for CEOs? And we're going to be talking a bit about that throughout the conference, talking about Baxter's experience with Hurricane Helene tomorrow. How does COVID and how have these challenges really developed your crisis management or crisis response strategies as a CEO of a big company?
So COVID actually made us a better company. And I hate to say that because people died during COVID. But as a company, we became better. We started to question everything about our company. Are we in the right business? Are we operating the business the right way? Do we have the right talent running the business? You know, quickly throughout COVID, you started to see who was a victim every day, you know, complain about the pandemic. And who was a victor, thinking about different solutions. Throughout COVID, the entire industry redefined our pricing strategy. We had to transfer some of the pain, sadly, to others. So we stopped taking abuse on 300-400 basis points of price erosion. Throughout COVID, we started to have conversations around cash flow management. At one point, this company that I lead could have gone into bankruptcy. We had to get a revolver loan for $1.7 billion. All of a sudden, we started to talk about revenue is vanity, income is sanity, but cash is king. We got to collect. We got to preserve cash. COVID was a zero-based budget exercise on steroids. You know, we operate with 43% SG&A, which is very high. Where are we allocating the dollars? Should we be mediocre in 125 countries, or should we be best in class in 15? which account for 95% of our revenue to start with. So COVID was a great experience. And in the background of COVID, we saw who really was a great leader at Zimmer Biomet, who was a wartime general, which is what we need, and who were the bureaucrats and the executives that give a lot of beautiful speeches with great PowerPoints, but don't know how to lead through a crisis. So in many ways, I tell my team, let's always think COVID-like. I want my team to always operate with the sense of urgency that we had throughout COVID, with focus, with discipline, with a sense of unity that we had back then. And I do think in some ways, this minor crisis that we are going on with tariffs is bringing the best out of people once again. And we're operating with the same focus, with the same discipline, and the same urgency.
All right, great answer. Would anyone like there out there like to ask a question? You're right there, Bill. Pick one, Kayleen. Nope. Is it, we get that on, Rich?
No.
There we are. Please give us your name and your company, please.
Sure. Hi, my name's Kate. I work for a company called Team Consulting. We do design development of innovative new medical devices. Very excited about what you were saying about working with external companies. My question is one around the vision for the next 20, 30 years. I'm asking you to vision a time where we don't have any obesity. So imagine a time in maybe 20 years, 30 years, because of all the drugs out there, and like the Vegavis and the Ozempics, et cetera, where everybody takes that, so there's no one has obesity. What impact does no obesity have on your particular company? Because obesity obviously has a huge impact in the orthopedic space.
Okay, thanks for the question. So when GLP-1s got approved, or not when they got approved, when they became, you know, the groundbreaking therapy that they became around November of 2023, have been on the job about a month or 2 months, our company went down 20% market cap-wise. Everybody felt that was the end of the world, right? Everybody's going to be skinny. If everybody's skinny, there is no osteoarthritis. And then the conversation moved from TikTok to science. Because the reality is that, yeah, weight does induce pain. It's a factor in osteoarthritis. But the three, and the doctor here in the front row can keep me honest, the three predominant causes of osteoarthritis are genetics, right? You have it or don't. Age, the older that you are, the higher the probability. The second largest market in the world for Zimmer Biomet and all orthopedic companies is Japan. Obesity is not a big problem in Japan. People do live long, and that's why it's the second largest market. And then third is mobility. Again, weight is a factor, but it's not one of the three leading causes of osteoarthritis. Genetics, age, and mobility. When people become mobile, then they face injury. And if you're a pickable player and you get injured, at some point you and I may become friends in an operating room. So we moved the conversation to science, and then we started to see things like actually GLP-1 drugs in many ways are more of a tailwind than a headwind. As people started to take Ozempic, Mounjaro, and whatnot, they lowered their BMI scores. Now they're candidates for surgery. As people, and I have a lot of friends that lost 20, 30 pounds on these drugs, as they lose weight, all of a sudden they start playing pickleball and becoming mobile. And let me tell you, if you've not been a runner for the last 20 years, it's a bad idea to lose 25 pounds and run the New York Marathon. And we have seen an explosion of those cases in sports medicine and whatnot. So people are living longer. You know, if you're taking one of these drugs, all of a sudden you don't have the same risk of, you know, cardiovascular disease. If you live longer, you and I are going to be friends as well. So long-winded way to tell you, Kate, that GLP-1s are more of a tailwind than a headwind for us. And we actually love it. We're tracking the data. We're seeing that today 30% of the patients that go through a knee or hip procedure are actually taking one of those GLP-1s. So if this is game-changing medicine, and it looks like it is, and it's going to help people live longer, better lives, God bless GLP-1s. I'm all for it.
I was going to run a marathon, but now that you said that, I'll go without. I'm good. Kayleen, do we have another question from? Oh, here we go.
Thanks, Bill Batten, S3 Connected Health, and I'm from the Twin Cities area. You talk about transformation of your company. Orthopedic companies typically do an implant, see people through rehab and that sort of thing. As we get to smart implants and the ability to track a patient, monitor them, go through multiple implants potentially as they live longer, can you talk about your transformation from a device company to a data company and to a company that has that longer reach to the patients?
Thanks, Bill. And let me start with humility by telling you that we're in the really early innings. really early innings. And don't ask me which inning, because I'm not a baseball fan. And every time somebody asks me what inning, I butcher the answer. I say, like, the 44th inning. And then they explain to me that in baseball, you don't have so many innings. So early stages of the transformation, we really, really are inspired, excited, and double down on smart implants. So we have a partnership with Canary Medical. The only, as Scott mentioned earlier, the only company with a smart implant. We're tracking data after surgery, and we're tracking things like lowering readmissions, of course, lowering office hours, follow-ups, office hours devoted to follow-ups with surgeons. We're tracking different outcomes for different patients with different anatomies. And what we do with all that data is engaging in predictive analytic discussions, being able, again, to contract with somebody and say, because I know this phenotype of a patient, I can guarantee you, doctor or hospital, a certain readmission rate or a certain complication rate or a certain risk of infection and whatnot. So early innings, but we already have north of 10,000 10,000 patients, millions of data points to leverage this conversation. We today collect data across the entire ecosystem, before surgery, during surgery, and after surgery. We believe that the data that we collect before surgery can prevent surgeries. We believe that the data that we collect during surgery can shape how you do your rehab, your physical therapy, and whatnot. And we believe that the data we're collecting after surgery is going to help us in designing better devices, having different contracts with customers. So early innings, but this is super exciting. And I do think, again, going back to Zimmer Biomet 10 years from now, data becomes one of the major revenue streams of Zimmer Biomet in the next 5 years. Thank you, Bill.
Early innings. I think you know baseball better than you're letting on.
I don't know anything about baseball other than it's very long.
We have one more question. Oh. I don't know who has the microphone.
Hi, I'm Julia. I'm a senior studying biomedical engineering at Cornell, graduating this upcoming month. And I'm here to learn about what's going on in the industry.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And as you said, with just changing technology, AI, humanoids, and this kind of new era of med tech, how can someone like me, early in their career, looking to make an impact in this industry, while education is not necessarily evolving at the same rate, how can myself and I guess everyone in this industry position ourselves to learn more and change our skill set and adapt our skill set to be part of this new conversation and to be breaking into these new startups and technologies?
Wow, I love it, Julia. So a couple of answers here. Number one, by reaching out to people like myself, happy to give you my contact information so we can expose you to what we do and you can become smarter about what companies like Zimmer Biomet does. Being in this conference is a great start. Be in the field, spend time with people like Dr. Sigman. I'm sure he will allow you to see some cases with him. I'm putting you on the spot here, Scott. But just don't lose the passion and get educated on it. So reading, exploring companies, and again, I mean it, I'll give you my contact information, and getting to know where we are today. This is a fascinating industry. And you can tell by my rapid tone, every day I get more passionate about it. And it's going to transform itself in the next 5 to 10 years. So much is going to change. So stay humble, stay curious, come to these conferences. I'll follow up with you, see cases, spend time with doctors, and you're going to have a bright future.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. Is there another question out there? Oh, I'm not sure. Chris is. Oh, okay. I don't know if anyone has had the microphone. Okay.
Are we?
By the way, I love that question, Julia. I do. I'm still thinking about it. I wish we had more people in today's world at your age that stand up and say, I want to be relevant. I want to do bigger, bolder things. I want to learn about this industry. So you're going to go really far.
Good morning. I'm Jim Winder. I'm from PTC here in the Seaport. I'm on the other end of that spectrum. I'm in my 60s, so I'm not starting out. But I've been in this business for quite a long time. And AI is very exciting, but you mentioned data. You need data to take advantage of AI. And one thing that I see in the product development cycle, we're still on documents. We need to go documents to data in order to get the benefits of AI. Traceability, requirements, risk, all that stuff, and the joy of those employees. You know, you mentioned the three, four Ps. The employees are in there too. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of that transformation in the product development cycle, docs to data.
Yeah, again, as I mentioned, really early innings, and we're doing more external than we're doing internal because we don't have the capabilities. And by the way, if anybody here is in the data management, predictive analytic business, I want to talk to you. So we collect data, as I mentioned, before surgery, during, and after, but it's very fragmented. We don't integrate it the right way. We're not able to bundle it the right way. We have a lot of information that is useless. So there's very few portions of the millions of data points that we get in today, Jim, that actually we use in a meaningful way. So we're all about learning here. This is not something that we do really well, but we know that this is the future.
All right, great. Well, I'm sure folks will probably want to take you up on that offer too. I want to talk to you. So we'll give them some time to do that. You exceeded my expectations with the opening. I was excited to have you here.
Still the Taylor Swift of orthopedics?
Still the Taylor Swift of orthopedics. You exceeded Taylor Swift. And just as a background, you had texted me about something months ago when I was putting the agenda, and I just said, hey, would you be the opening keynote for Device Talks Boston? And you immediately said yes. It was like, so this is real. Like what you're seeing, this is the gentleman you're seeing. So I'm really grateful that you'd spend some time with us this morning and for your support of Device Talks. Thank you so much for that.
Tom, you're doing an amazing job. I'll close the same way I started by saying this gentleman right here, Scott and a few others, are the real influencers of what we do. So again, I'm not getting paid to be here today. I got up at 3:45 to be here today. Unsolicited comment. Listen to these voices. Julia, going back to what you can do to be better and get into this industry, this is a great place to be. Listen to these people, having the right conversation around the customer, innovation, the partnerships, and the industry. So thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks again for joining us on the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Thanks to Protolabs for sponsoring this episode and for sponsoring Device Talks Minnesota. Once again, check it out. Maybe we still have a few seats left. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com. I kind of doubt it, but give it a shot. And I would love to see you there. Thanks again for being part of Device Talks. Make sure you subscribe to the Device Talks podcast network. And of course, attend our future Device Talks Tuesdays events. And please connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm Tom Salemi. Please connect with Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, and connect with Chris Newmarker, the editor of Mass Device. So, and share this episode on LinkedIn. Give us a rating too, if you wouldn't mind doing that. I'm told that helps. I'm told that helps people find the podcast. We certainly would love to have more and more people enjoy this content that we love putting together. So, hope to see you at Device Talks Minnesota. And we'll also be in back of the West Coast on October 15th and 16th. But I'll deal with that then. And hopefully I'll be past this cold by the time we're in Minnesota. God, I hope so. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.